The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, joined by the only nickname that will apply, the Astute Bull, Andy Hamilton. It's the only one that would possibly make sense, and you have it. You really like that nickname, and I'm going to let you explain why you like it so much. It just really caught your fancy.
Yeah, it's tremendous Instagram handle. Corey Bullock?
Yeah.
That's her Instagram handle.
Yeah. And you,
it's my favorite.
You really liked that Instagram handle. And can you dig deeper on why you like it so much? What is it about it? Like, you're smiling and beaming over here.
I don't know. I grew up on a farm and had beef cattle and had some bulls. And I don't know of any of them that were all that astute. But I don't know. Maybe just a juxtaposition of the whole thing is tremendous.
I want to explain who Corey Bullock is. She wrestles for McKendree. Mm-hmm. And at 191. No, one. She's not at 191.
170?
170, yeah. So she's there. So she's an All-American. And
U23 World Bronze Medalist.
Yeah. So she's solid wrestler. But if we're talking about women's wrestling, the very first National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Championship. I feel like I'm the expert on saying that entire wording. Like, I'm not gonna abbreviate it. I finally got it dialed in. The National Women's Wrestling. See, I even messed it up there.
You did.
National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Championships.
No. You're forgetting the first two words.
Cliff Keen. National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Championships. Took place in Adrian, Michigan, one of two championships that were on track, and the championships that we get to talk about because Division III's canceled, Division II's canceled, Division I is canceled, junior college took place, but on the track wrestling platform, we had those, and we'll start there. McKendree won the title and looked pretty good doing it. It was a good first effort for Adrian College to pull it off. And just an explanation again, it's a little confusing because you had the WCWA tournament that took place from 2004 until this year. It's still going on. That was just a way for all women's college wrestling programs to be in one tournament. College teams can still go to that, but now that we have NCAA teams, they are separating. You have one NCAA-type tournament, which is the one that I just laid out for you, then an NAIA tournament that got canceled, and it looks like that's going to go in that way, and there's going to be a split. My opinion is I think the WCWA will not take place next year. We'll see if that happens, but that is the current landscape of women's wrestling, and McKendree is the inaugural team champion.
How'd you enjoy that event, Kyle?
I thought it was great. Loved what they did. It was exactly what they needed to do to start out with approximately 20 teams and allowed 15 competitors from each team if they had enough numbers. And I thought they did a really good job of handling it. And you're always going to have a few little first time jitters, and you're going to have a few things that are a little bit of a hang up. But I thought on the whole that when you go into this, you have a collegiate tournament like this where it's freestyle. The week before, they had a divisional or a regional for a Division III at Adrian, and then transferring and going over to freestyle. There's just going to be a few little hiccups along the way when you have different styles of wrestling. But on the whole, with Bruce Baumgartner being there, 5-time world and Olympic champion, president of USA Wrestling, executive director of USA Wrestling, Rich Bender was there. You had Mike Moyer of the NWCA. They really showed the importance of being there and supporting this, and can't thank their leadership enough for being on board with women's wrestling. Appreciated that very much. And don't know if you got a chance to just follow what happened. And it was a Simon Fraser and McKendree 2-team race with King possibly being there. And that's kind of how it shook out. But really thought it was a good first showing.
It's been, as we're recording this, that's been about 10 days ago, and it seems like 2 months, at least to me. And the world's changed so much in the last, it seems like every hour is like a full day in itself. And think back to where we were traveling across the country, you out to Michigan, me down to Wichita for NAIAs, and then over to Tulsa for Big 12s. And we still had an NCAA tournaments we were looking forward to. All that's changed. And it seems like months ago that we were watching wrestling and covering you at the Cliff Keen Women's Collegiate Wrestling National Championships. Did I get it right?
No, I don't think you did.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a good effort, and but I missed out on the Cliff Keen part. So, hey, I'm still learning it.
Nonetheless.
Yeah.
It's just been wild what's transpired here since we got home from those events.
Yeah. And we'll dive in deep with the NAIA portion with Grandview head wrestling coach Nick Mitchell, but that's one of the tournaments that did take place. But just thinking about what got canceled and just the emotions, this is like a 9/11 moment, because I'll remember where I was. I'll remember exactly who gave me the news, how I got the news, who was here, because we recorded a couple shows. We had Barry Davis for a D1 preview show. We had Jim Miller from Wartburg for a D3 preview show. We were going to do a D2. As soon as we got done, there was news that no fans were going to be allowed when we did those shows. And then it's like, hey, we're going to hold out and not run these, because we're going to run them right away. And then word comes down, I was about to leave for the D3s, which are in Cedar Rapids, which are about an hour away from Cedar Falls, where we live. And I just kept thinking, this isn't going to happen, just watching ESPN and the news and what they were saying. And so I just kept holding on. And finally they canceled it, and I never made the trip down. I don't know if that was your thought process too, just playing it out as long as possible, but it turned out to be the right move.
Went out to dinner the night that the brackets were out, and I'd written some recap stuff from the brackets being out, and then I didn't feel like publishing it because it felt like inevitable that this is a waste of time to analyze these brackets, because they're going to change. Like, there are going to be schools that won't come to the national tournament, and who knows if we'll even have a tournament the way things are going at that point. And then came home from dinner Wednesday night, and the first thing I hear is Rudy Gobert tests positive for the coronavirus. Tom Hanks and his wife have it. And at that point, I thought, there's no way we're having a national tournament the following week. And here we are. We're supposed to be in Minneapolis getting ready for Jay Robinson's 7-7 celebration, and instead we're in Cedar Falls recording on the mat.
One of the things that still boggles my mind is that the Pan American Olympic qualifiers took place in Ottawa, Canada. Really hard for me to wrap my head around how that took place. Not necessarily why, but they must have had enough intel to pull it off, and it did get pulled off, and it was a nice break to be able to have that. I know that I probably enjoyed being able to watch that as much as any wrestling, because it filled a void that wasn't there, and just being able to watch the Americans compete. And so let's start there with a really important event for the United States. If we have the Olympics, if we have the Olympic trials, those Olympic trials have been postponed, canceled from the original date, so postponed to a potentially later date. But let's talk about those. Across the board, solid performance for the United States. The women are all in, all six weight classes, 5 of 6 for the men's freestyle, 4 of 6 for the Greco-Roman. And so we're just missing 3 of the 18. I thought they did a good job of really getting the job done up at the Pan Am qualifier. The one that everyone's going to talk about, Zane Rutherford, had his opportunity there, just got a little out of position, got a little assertive on a situation and got pinned. But other than that, it was a really stellar performance for the United States.
It's crazy how one position can color the weekend or discolor the weekend a little bit, put a cloud over it. But by and large, yeah, the United States did a great job. Look at the Greco, the two that they left home, 77 kilos. Pat Smith runs into a tough Cuban and drops a match there. And that's going to be a difficult one to qualify with the depth in the Greco weight class worldwide at 77 kilos. And especially you look at the European championships there, there's 5, 6, 7 highly credentialed guys that they're not all going to qualify through the Euros. There's only going to be two of them that come out of the Euros. So 4, 5, 6 guys there that he's going to have to contend with, or whomever goes to the last chance World Olympic qualifier, whenever that is. So there's that. Adam Kuhn loses to Yasmani Acosta Fernandez of Chile, 2017 world medalist. It's a tough one there. Tough match, 3-2 loss on a passivity point, I believe, in, you know, at the end, about a minute and a half to go. And then Zane lost to the first Argentinian Olympian now in wrestling since 1996. And boy, the way is the ease in which he scored that first takedown, I think it was probably going to be a tech the other way in Zane's favor if he hadn't lost the lock on the leg lace. And man, just unfortunate set of circumstances, because not only do you fail to qualify it there, you're also staring at a pretty long uphill climb at that World Olympic qualifier. Now there's some guys the United States could send, Zane being one of them, Jordan Oliver, Yanni, going down the list at 65, where it's a deep weight class for the U.S. But you look at the list of guys who are not qualified worldwide, particularly the ones who are coming through the European championships, and you got Haji Aliyev has not qualified yet for Azerbaijan, Vladimir Konchakashvili for Georgia, 3, 4, 5 pretty salty Europeans as well that are going to be in that European the European qualifier whenever that one gets rescheduled. So United States is up against it a little bit at 65 kilos. And you mentioned to me the history there, Kyle. U.S. has only one other time failed to qualify a weight class for the Olympics, and that was 60 kilos in 2008. And Mike Zadek, we've talked about that in past episodes. The circumstances that led to him getting in the Olympic Games, which were wild, that the Bulgarian, I believe it was a Bulgarian, that blew out his Achilles playing basketball in Beijing the week leading up to the Olympic Games. And then his alternate was on his way to the airport and drove his car off the road and was hospitalized. And so there was one opening, and Mike Zadek got in. Otherwise, the United States has been represented every time there's been an Olympic Games that there's been American participation.
Full men's freestyle across the board. And just taking what you said there, Rich Bender was at the Cliff Keen National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Championships in Adrian, Michigan, and he had the 30-minute variety of that story and what took place. And there's a lot more layers of timing and him being at the right place at the right time with the right people. And when he got the news and that he happened to be right there next to the person who could get him into that spot. So there's so much to that, that we've had a full boat, and I'd like to see that streak continue. But as we talk about Zane, one of the things, and it goes back a couple episodes, it's sort of the same topic, but it's the criticism of Zane Rutherford in a way. You just see people pile on top and say, if it was someone else or Yanni would have done better, he would have made the Olympics for us. And I just don't like that narrative at all. If you can't beat Zane, you can't beat Zane. He didn't qualify. He couldn't. If you're going to be a world champion, you've got to beat the guys in your bracket. And so it goes back to a book by Sam Sheridan. It's called Fighter's Heart. And essentially, he's the author. He went into the cage and he fought in mixed martial arts. And one of the things he said was he will never criticize anyone for getting in the cage and doing it, because he said it's so difficult, it's so hard. And it's the same here, is that you're criticizing a guy who really is an exceptional talent and trying to negate what how good this guy is. And I don't think that criticism is fair sometimes, that if Yanni had his opportunities to beat him, he could have beat him and he could have been the representative. And I think that he just got a little assertive in that position, should have probably just stayed back a little bit, calmed down. And like you say, he probably would have teched the guy, but got out of position and he got pinned. And now we're in a situation, but I won't criticize the guy because he went out there and he was,
he was going for it.
Yeah, he was.
Maybe a little bit too hard, but he was going for it.
And yeah, it's just, we have to get it qualified. I just want to see that happen. And we do have one more chance, and you got to kind of be perfect. You got to make the finals. And again, as we're talking philosophy here, we saw this happen with the men's and women's side, is that the men's freestyle side, they decided to wrestle in the finals. The women all decided not to. So they all got silver medals. So if you see that in the results and wonder what happened there, none of them were injured. They just opted not to. And in a way, it's like, what's the point? You qualified the weight. In a way, why would you even have the finals? But I'll tell you what, David Taylor was chomping at the bit to get out there. Like, he wanted that match and it didn't happen. So on the men's freestyle side, none of those guys that made the finals, which Thomas Gilman, Nick Gwizdowski, and David Taylor, they all wanted to wrestle. None of them got a match.
Them's the breaks, Kyle.
Yeah. And I wish there was a little bit more incentive that we could have seen those. I wanted to see all the women wrestle. Well,
you know what, Kyle? Like, you know, you talked about entering Pan Ams for what was it, Venezuela?
I should have.
So the fact that there wasn't a finals match, I'm just going to blame it on you.
You're blaming me.
You could have been out there representing another country.
Yeah, that could have been, man. I probably had to bump up to 74 kilos. I don't know if I could have made it down in time, but it would have been pretty ugly. And then the week before,
well, you wouldn't have had to contend with Burroughs, so that's true. A plus.
But the week before, we haven't even talked about that. We had the Pan Am Championships. Mm-hmm. And again, just some clarification, the Pan Am Games are more like what you would think of with the Olympics. It's a little more prestigious. And the Pan Am Championships would be more like the World Championships. So they have those every year. And they had the Pan Am Championships. And just a good test for some of those guys. Got another chance to watch Jordan Burroughs wrestle. And he wrestled Franklin Gomez and got a little heated there at the end of the match. But it's good to see Burroughs out there. And anytime you get to watch one of the greatest of all times, it's fun to be able to tune into that and watch JB wrestle. So enjoyed seeing him at the Pan Am Championships.
Yeah, and that's becoming a nice little rivalry. They've had some good scraps. The one a year ago at the Pan Ams that Gomez scored on the edge of the mat and 10 seconds to go, and JB goes and adjusts his socks like Clark Kent stepping into the phone booth and goes and gets his score.
I've watched that takedown at least 50 times, and it's like 0.1 he gets it. You just watch it, and it's almost like you just see the clock right there, and he does get it, but it is so down to the wire.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's funny because his ability to go get a score when he wants to is a blessing and a curse, and he's talked about this. You know, him and I have had conversations about this, like, that, you know, talking about wrestling with freedom. And I asked him out at the training center last year, is it freedom being behind with 10 seconds to go and you got to go get points? And he said, yeah. And, you know, he kicks it into that extra gear at that point. And you almost like expect him now when he's got 10 seconds on the clock to be able to go and get one against somebody. But watching that unfold a year ago, it gets down to two and you're like, okay, maybe it's not going to happen this time. And then he still finds a way to pull it out. But
it's one of the great clips, because it's the closest thing you'll ever see to a last second shot that you'd have in basketball or football or a walk-off home run. It's the closest thing you'll ever see to that, that he gets it like with 0.1 and then the time expires and then he wins the match. We got to get to Nick Mitchell. Anything else you want to chime in with before we get to one of the great coaches? 9 championships in a row. You were there for it, and you've covered him when you were in Des Moines, and he's done a really good job of creating the a tie with Dan Gable.
Yeah, it's amazing what they've done there. And just, you know, we probably won't touch on this with Nick, but it's worth saying just NAIA wrestling, man, it's so much fun. Like for me to go cover it and watch this division, when Grandview won its first title, I think there were 35 teams. The division has doubled since then. The wrestling gets better and better every year. It's this hodgepodge of guys, too. I mean, really eclectic bunch of guys where you've got some guys that went D1 and didn't make it, and they're dropping back down. You got some guys that are maybe fell through the cracks for one reason or another. You got this, you know, bunch of grinders who maybe athletically weren't good enough to make it at the higher level. But the common denominator is these dudes are out there like kitchen sinking it, Kyle. And like you see a little bit of backyard wrestling element to it, which makes it a lot of fun. I mean, you don't see too many matches where guy gets a takedown and he's just hanging on to win 3-2. You don't see too many matches where it's a guy just trying to win on riding time. I mean, we're seeing multiple first period takedowns. You're seeing a lot of stuff that you don't see at higher levels, but from maybe you see a higher level of holding position and technique and things like that. But in terms of scrapping and entertaining wrestling, I love NAIA wrestling. It just gets better and better every year. And the fact that Grandview has remained ahead of the curve while everybody's been gunning for them for 9 years now, and they've managed to maintain a comfortable lead over the pack, it's going to be interesting to see, because there are new programs coming in year after year into that division. And can someone step up to their level? I think what we've seen over the course of the last 9 years is there have been a lot of different programs that have come and gone and finished in that number two spot. Nobody's been able to crack through and beat Grandview. We saw this year at the National Duels. It was 40-0 in the finals. So NAIA wrestling's getting better every year, and Grandview continues to get better as well.
And just the element that you can have teammate versus teammate at the national tournament. I mean, how many times would we like that with Penn State or Iowa or some of these major programs where there might be a couple good guys and they have more than a couple good guys in their program, and you get a chance to sort it out at the tournament. And even a stranger, a teammate against teammate finals, we've seen that happen. So it's a unique brand of wrestling, and like the direction. I hope people get on board with it more from just a fan perspective, because it really is worth watching. Because I like your description there. It is just an eclectic group of people all on a different spectrum, and a lot of them have just high talent. Maybe it was the grade part, and they were able to get in with an NAIA program, and you see how talented they really are. And so it is a different mix, and then you get the grinders. And so I like that explanation. But we'll get with Nick Mitchell, unless you have any final thoughts. What do you say we get to Nick Mitchell?
Sounds good.
Our guest today is Nick Mitchell, head wrestling coach of Grandview University, winners of 9 consecutive NAIA wrestling championships. How are you, Nick?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Well, we're good. You got one in. Like, the NAIs didn't get canceled. If it would have been a week later, it would have been all done. Have you thought about that in hindsight?
Man, we thought about it a ton. We're just, on one hand, we feel really lucky. We're fortunate that we got it in. And, you know, just even more, it makes you appreciate getting the opportunity to compete. But at the same time, man, just really hurting for those guys, the D3, D2 guys that were right there at the tournament ready to compete. And then obviously, the Division I guys that aren't going to get their opportunity this weekend, man. It's disappointing, sad for those guys.
You wrestled D3 at Wartburg. If you would have missed out on that opportunity, what do you think that would have felt like?
Man, I don't know. I mean, you think about it now. But obviously I'm a little more mature now than I was at that age. And I just can't imagine. I know my response wouldn't have been positive. I mean, it was just, you know, like any college wrestler, you make it your life, you know, you put so much into it, and we're just in such a unique situation too, compared to a lot of sports where it all culminates at the end, you know, and every championship does, but, it's even, you know, it's more unique with wrestling that that's the way it is. And so it just, man, it, you just feel like such an emptiness, I feel like.
You've talked about how placing second at the Division III Nationals has driven you and wanted to make you reach higher than what you did as an athlete. How about missing out? What do you think that does for an athlete that they can carry with them?
Well, hopefully, you know, as a coach, what I'd be talking to my guys about is just like we talk about every year, regardless of how the tournament ends, how the year ends, it's more about that process, you know, of getting there. And it takes some years of maybe reflection to figure that out. And so that's why I try to help my guys figure that out, because I didn't really understand that when I was competing. But hopefully these guys, that they don't get their opportunity, they can feel good about the work that they put in to get to that point, you know, and just the person that they've become. And that's what we, you know, everybody knows we talk about championship lifestyle with our program, and it's kind of a broken record, but that's really what it's about. It's about becoming the best version of yourself throughout the year so that you can compete at the highest level at the end. And I don't think it's like, it's not going to make them feel a lot better right now about not getting their opportunity to win a title. But when they're done, when it's all said and done, and they go on and they have families, and, you know, they become husbands and dads, and, you know, and for the girls, wives and moms, and, you know, and they go out and get jobs. Hopefully what they did throughout this full season is what sticks with them, you know, the rest of their lives and makes them better in all those other areas.
How do you figure out a lesson and not go through it? So if you try to implement a lesson to these guys and you say, I don't want them to go through what I went through, how do you do that just through teaching and learning and being their coach?
You know, so we tell our guys a lot, like there's three types of people. There's the people that they can learn from other people's mistakes. Those are the smartest people, and that was not me. There's the people that learn from their own mistakes, and that was me. And then there's people that never learn. And so it's just helping them understand, like, just be aware of what's going on around you, you know, and see what they're doing and see what's happening, and learn from other people's mistakes as much as you can. And when you mess up, just, okay, it's going to happen, but you learn from your mistakes, then, you know, make a change. And all these situations, and these aren't even mistakes sometimes. I mean, in this situation, we're talking about something that's completely out of their hands, but it's about how you respond, like anything else. So whether you make a mistake, whether there's some adversity, whether there's some kind of setback, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to respond? You know, yeah, you deserve some time to feel bad and maybe pout about it a little bit, but how long is that going to last? And then where are you going to go from there? I think that's really the secret on something like this.
Jim Miller was your coach when you were at Wartburg. He won 10 NCAA championships, and really, from my vantage point, one of the all-time great coaches, regardless of sport. In talking to Jim and knowing Jim, the one thing that comes across is that his formula is exceedingly simple. And I think a lot of people try to make it complex, like it's some magical formula. It seems like you've said in interviews that you've adopted that. It is pretty simple, isn't it? It just is pretty hard to execute.
Exactly. I mean, that he was a master of that with everything, not just with philosophy, with motivation, with technique. I mean, he was really good at just simplifying things. And I really try to do the same thing. You know, people get really, it's easy to get, you know, into the weeds on things, and it's really like, take a step back. And, you know, for us, it's that, I mean, just how about this? Like, you know, Coach Miller talks about do it anyway, you know, and so it's something we talk about. That's a simple, it's not easy. Like you said, it's not easy to do the things you don't feel like doing, but it's a simple idea. You just do it anyway. Do what you know is supposed to get done. And, you know, we take that a step further, do more, right? Just do more than everybody else. You want to be successful, put more work in, put more time in. Do more than the other people around you are doing. And again, those are really, really basic, simple philosophies. But they're not easy to execute because they take self-discipline.
Even though they're simple and they're hard to execute, let's just take Jim Miller as an example and some of the great coaches, because now you're in that framework. You've won 9 in a row. Gable's won 9 in a row. It's the all-time record for wrestling. is there an intangible that you see in Jim Miller since you know him that he's got something in his DNA that separates him from everyone else?
I think he's just driven. You know, I mean, just being around him, you can, when I was an athlete, you know, he was driven. He was always highly motivated. And I saw it even more when I was coaching with him. You just see this energy level when he's after something that he wants. And I think that's something that can rub off on you. You know, you're around that, you feel it, you absorb it. And that's the way it was, you know, it brought the rest of us up, you know, as an athlete, it brought us up. As an assistant coach, it brought me up. I think it brought up the other coaches around him. There's just this drive, you know, and I feel like obviously there's a lot of things I try to take from him, but you know, keeping things simple is one of them. And then just trying to have that same drive of nothing else is going to be okay other than accomplishing the goal, you know? So we go out and it doesn't matter what the situation is. It doesn't matter where we stand right now. We're not going to use anything as an excuse. We're going to go attack the situation and accomplish a goal. And there's some drive behind that. You know, it's a competitive, nothing else is okay other than championships, being the best, just getting what you want and getting what you're after.
Nick, highly successful people don't just take stuff from one person. I imagine that there've been a lot of people that have been influential and you becoming a successful wrestling coach. Who are some of the people that you've taken the most from, who have been influential forces in your life and in your development as a coach in particular?
Man, I mean, I'm really lucky. I came up, you know, I grew up in Des Moines, and so I had good kids club coaches. You know, I wrestled for the back then, Des Moines Lincoln was like the only real kids club around. And there was a coach there named Rick Lewis. He's still around. He was a man of faith. He had a high intensity level, or at least I felt like he did at that age. He was really big on basics, you know, and then I was able to work with Mike Land when I was young, and I learned a ton about the mental aspect of wrestling. Made a huge impact on me. My high school coach was Frank Baltzley, and probably a guy that didn't get enough credit. I mean, he just always had successful teams. He had big numbers all the time. He was a lot of fun. You know, I learned just the respect side of things with, you know, how to treat people we're competing against, referees, you know, so just, and then obviously get into college. And then really as a coach, my thing that I really try to do is I steal a little bit from everybody. You know, I obviously being in the state, I grew up watching the Brands brothers wrestle, and I always love their intensity. I love listening to those guys talk. Yeah, obviously you always paid attention to Coach Gable. And then when Kale came in, all of a sudden he took a totally different approach than what we were used to in Iowa. You know, you went from seeing every high school coach in the country trying to act like Gable and Brands jumping around, being crazy in the corner. And then all of a sudden Kale standing in the corner with his hands behind his back, you know, and I think it opened up a different avenue for some people to say, hey, you can just be who you are. You know, you don't have to coach one certain way. And so just, that's it all the time. Just trying to steal, you know, I got to know Tom Ryan over the years. He's a great guy. Yeah. I love hearing him talk. He just thinks different than everybody else. So we're fortunate, man, that we've got some really good people in our sport to steal things from.
How do you get someone to believe in you and believe in what you're doing? Because as we talk about these championship coaches, I think the element is you also believe what they're saying. We've been around coaches that probably say the right things, but they don't necessarily have the results or the execution to match what their words are. How do you get to that point? Is it a process, or do you kind of have it right away?
No, I think it's probably a process. You know, I think one thing is each year, you know, you always have new guys that come in the room, whether they're freshmen coming straight from high school, or you get some transfer students. And my big thing is really just trying to build up a trust factor with those guys, like just helping them understand that, you know, first and foremost, we are, as a coaching staff, we're there for more than just wrestling. You know, we want those guys to understand that. And, you know, they're going to have personal problems going on in their lives. family issues, you know, girlfriend problems. I mean, it's just, you name it. They're in college for 4 or 5 years. There's going to be a lot more going on than just wrestling. And so we try to make sure they understand that we're here to help them through those things. We push them academically. And I think that, you know, if we're hard on them academically, then I think it shows them that, hey, this isn't just about wrestling. You know, they understand that they can, it builds another, they might not always like it at first, but I think it helps them build trust that we're about what we talk about. You know, we're trying to help them in every area, not just with wrestling. And once you build that up, and they can see that you believe in them, and that they can trust you, then it's way easier to ask them to work for you. And that's been the biggest thing. And it's something that's got to start with me. But then, you know, I'm lucky. I've got a really good coaching staff, but that takes coaching too. You know, you got to help the young coaches understand that, hey, these guys don't all think like you, you know? And so you got to relate to them. You got to get on their level. You have to figure out what makes them tick. And it might not be the same thing that made you tick when you were competing. And so a lot of talk about that, you know, with our coaches as the year starts and making sure that they're on the same page as these guys and just showing them that you love them and that you're going to be there for them. And once you do that, man, I'm telling you, these guys will do anything. You hear all the time, like, buy into the system, you know, buy into the program. It's kind of a cliche when you hear people talk about buy-in, but I think that the kids will buy in if they believe, right? They buy in if they trust what you're saying. And then when we talk about it, we try to model it. You know, I can't talk about championship lifestyle and then not live it myself, you know? And then being honest when I screw up and, you know, do something stupid, just letting the guys know, like, hey, man, I went home last night and I was jerked my wife because I was mad about how practice went. Well, that didn't go very well for me, you know? So just letting these guys know, man, this is something that we try to live and we believe in it and we talk passionately about it. And it's, that's how you, it's just one of the billion steps in creating culture.
Got the LinkedIn notification the other day that your work anniversary, your 12th year at Grandview popped up this week. Take me back to the beginning here with when you start looking at this job, what was appealing to you? Did you think you were sitting on a potential gold mine with Grandview? What did you like about the job? What was it then? And what did you think needed to happen for Grandview to become a national championship contender?
Yeah. I mean, so obviously I was up at Wartburg at the time. Grandview had just hired a football coach earlier that year, Mike Woodley. He and Coach Miller were good friends going way back from high school, college days. And I found out about the job before it was even announced that Grandview was going to start wrestling. And it was intriguing to me because I'm from the Des Moines area. I grew up in Des Moines, you know, went to high school in Johnston. So was around here. And I've kind of felt like I was, it's like having a kid, you know, you're never ready until you're ready. And so I thought I was ready to be a head coach. But just like having a kid, you're never ready. And then you have a kid and you get a job and then you just get ready. And you figure out that you got 1,000 things you gotta do better. But, you know, I was intrigued. I was excited to be a head coach. And, you know, when I first came in on my first interview, obviously I was fired up about the job, but I was trying to be smart about it and just make sure like I wasn't that I was getting into a good situation. And after being here and talking to Troy Plummer, our athletic director, and spending some time, I felt really positive about it. And I talked to Coach Woodley too, and he's a talker and he talked to me for about an hour. But I was more sold after talking to him too, because he was kind of telling me why he was excited to be here. And it just felt like a good fit. And so then was able, I got asked to come back for a second interview. And that time I came in thinking like, man, I want this job and I want to prove to these guys that I'm the guy. And, it was a good situation. And I remember, about a week after that, Plummer called me and I took the job on the spot, you know, and it was kind of funny. I told it. So I had knee surgery. I had to have my knee scoped. And I said, because he told me he was going to call me that night. And I was like, well, I might be a little drugged up. I'm not sure because I'm getting my knee scoped. And I said, maybe you might want to call me the next day. But he called me that night and I accepted the position on the spot. No negotiation or anything. So who knows? He might have caught me at a good time there. But I was excited, man. I wanted that job. By that point, I was fired up.
If you could take what you know now in year 12 and go back to that first year as a first-time head coach, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, there's so much that you can, on one hand, I know for sure, like, I was a lot more impatient then. I probably would have been easier on the guys on those first couple teams because we had so many young guys. I didn't give them many breaks. I trained them the way we were training when I was at Wartburg, and they probably weren't ready for that yet. So on one hand, there's a part of me that's like, maybe we should have, you know, I probably would have retained a few more of those guys if I would have been a little bit easier. But on the other hand, maybe that's what set the precedent, you know, is letting those guys know, like, we're not gonna, because we were serious about that. We weren't going to train different because we were young. We weren't going to make excuses for ourselves because we were young. I was lucky. I found some good guys to coach right away. Grant Turner was with me right away. Jacob Helvey was with me right away. And that made a huge difference. And I don't know. I just, looking back, I know there's some, I probably would have been a little bit easier on the guys, but maybe that's not the right thing. You know, maybe you just stick to what got you to where we are now.
You mentioned Tom Ryan earlier in the show, and I think he's a resource that other coaches around the country will tap into. And in your position, is that something that other guys in NAIA or maybe other divisions that are up and coming coaches, do they come to you for advice, or is that something that happens much?
Yeah, it's been, the NWCA has started the Leadership Academy. I think it was about 11, 12 years ago. I was in one of the first academies as a mentee, and went through that. And that was kind of how I started making some of these connections with other coaches. And then I've been able to be a mentor for the academy. So I've done the one down in Florida a couple of times. I've done the FCA Leadership Academy in Illinois a few times. And the FCA one is actually where I met Coach Ryan. I've always got guys that are assigned to me as the people that I'm supposed to be mentoring. But I really like helping coaches within our division, you know, the other divisions. A couple of years ago, I was one of the mentors at the Leadership Academy. And at the same time, Neil Arisman was going through down at Little Rock. He was just getting ready to start the program. And I wasn't his mentor, but, you know, got to know him a little bit. And, you know, it's a little bit different because he's starting a Division I program. But I started a program and he's starting a program. And so we had a chance to talk a few times. And I really appreciate coaches that will reach out and ask questions. And it doesn't matter to me. I mean, if they're in our division, I'll still help them. You know, it makes our division better. I want those guys to do things the right way. I want them to know what's going on. I know how hard it is when you get started. Just, you don't know who to go to. You don't know who to ask. And if they do a good job, it just pushes us to be better. So yeah, that's been one cool thing about it. It's just being able to network and be willing to help guys that want help.
Your associate head coach is Paul Reedy. What did you see in him that made you want to hire him 10 years ago?
He's probably one of the hardest working guys I've ever been around. I mean, when I was finally got the position, it was after our second year going into the third year. He had already accepted a job at a high school down in New Orleans. We had a going away party for him, give him presents and everything. And that was like on a Friday night. And then that Monday, our athletic director told me that I was going to be able to hire somebody. And so I called him up and actually to my athletic director's credit, he's the one that told me to go get him. I was talking to him about, you know, a couple options of people that I could get I was hoping I could get. And I told him about Reedy and I said, man, he's supposed to leave this week to head down to New Orleans. And he's like, hey, that's your guy. Go get him. And I was like, ah, you're right. You know? So I called him up and was like, hey man, I got this position. And he's like, Mitchell, I'm going to be sick. You know, he was supposed to head down there, and Coach Miller helped set him up with the job. And, you know, he didn't want to go back on something he already had said he would do. But I knew he was the guy. And he just, that the year before, he was coaching with Steve Hamilton over at Perry High School. And every time they had a snow day, he'd come in, and they had a ton of snow days for some reason that year. And so he would come in and work out with us on those days. And it was just, you know, watching him, he was always so good at, you know, he'd wrestle with the guys, but he wouldn't always just like kick their butts. You know, he'd wrestle with them. He'd give them a good feel, and he'd always help them after. And he talked to them, and you could tell like he was in, you know, maybe 5-6 times throughout the whole year, but he was really good at building relationships with those guys. And I knew his work ethic. I'd seen him, you know, at Warburg. We lived together for a while. So there was a huge trust factor there. And probably, I mean, not even probably, that's the best thing that I ever did in this program was call him and say, hey dude, don't go to New Orleans, stay here.
You guys have won so many championships that until a couple weeks ago, he was a full 2 championships behind on his Twitter handle. He didn't even have 19 or 20. I see he's updated it. It says 9 time. I don't know if he has enough room in the Twitter line to be able to write them all out.
Yeah, man. He's not really about those kind of details. He's somebody has to tell him, hey, update your Twitter profile. He's too busy working.
Nick, the NAIA scholarship situation is different. I mean, it's if memory serves me correct, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it's 8 scholarships, right, that you have to deal with, and that's for the guys that actually, you use that
bumped,
year.
Yeah, they bumped us up to 10.
Okay,
bumped us up to 10, actually. Yeah,
and it's unlimited for the rest of your roster, correct? It's just the guys that you designate for who's competing that season.
Yeah, and so whoever wrestles in a varsity competition, you have to count their money against your total. And so that a varsity competition would mean if they wrestled in a dual meet, or if they're a point getter at a tournament, so like an invitational where you actually keep team score, any of those tournaments. And then obviously if you're, you know, postseason type of thing, that would count too. So yeah, you need to keep tabs throughout the year on who you've used. And here's the tricky part of that is, so in our division, anything that comes from the institution counts towards your limit. And this is why, you know, when they say, well, it's unlimited. Okay. Yes. But at the same time, if say I have a kid that comes to Grandview and he gets a $16,000 academic scholarship, but we don't give him any wrestling money. If we wrestle him in a varsity competition, that $16,000 would count against our limit. And it's a good thing because on one hand, that's a way to keep people from kind of working the system, you know, and say, no, we're just going to give them academic money and no wrestling money. but then that way, you know, we really do have to keep tabs on it and make sure that, you know, we're able to fit that in underneath that 10.
How do you account for injuries then? I mean, do you plan for that going in thinking that, you know, something's going to happen and we need a little buffer here, or what goes into that?
Yeah, so they, you do. I mean, you plan for it a little bit. Now, the NAI also puts some stuff in there too, where if a kid has a season ending injury, then you don't have to count the guy that you replace him with. So his money would be exempt.
You got a 4 timer now. How does that feel?
It was awesome. It was, man, I didn't really tell Evan this going into the national tournament, but I was nervous for him this year. And, you know, I don't feel like that often. I'm always anxious. I'm always, you know, stressed and whatever else, but I was, we did a pretty good job of, you know, keeping things in perspective. I think he had a good mindset going in, but I think even, you know, he was feeling it a little bit, and how can he not, you know, it's something that's always going to add a little bit of pressure. But really going into his finals match, I know I remember sitting down in the corner and Ross Larson, one of our assistant coaches, he sat down and he was like, man, I'm nervous. And I was like, me too. And you just, you know, most of the time going into those finals matches where, of course, you know, there's a little anxiety, but we're excited, you know, we're fired up. We feel like we've got it. And you just, you know, we knew that we were confident in Evan, but it's something we'd never had before, you know, and we were excited for him. And so really cool that he accomplished that, winning all 4 of those.
Have you gone back and watched 157?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I went back and watched it. It's a good match.
What was your reaction to seeing yourself on camera after that match?
It wasn't quite as bad as I felt like it was. So obviously I was, you know, for people that don't know, I was fired up after that match, and it came down to this, you know, 25, you know, Justin Portillo is a great kid. We come out and, you know, whatever, we're used to guys are booing when we're out there, fans are booing, you know, everybody except our fans, and that's okay. And he got beat, and everybody in the building was really happy that the Grandview guy lost. And then same thing happened at 41, really tough match, and end up getting caught on her back and getting pinned there. And, you know, so the place is going crazy. And then 57, he had a really tight match. And again, man, it was everybody against us, and which we're used to, but we pulled off the win there. And so I kind of gave it back to the crowd, and I was just fired up. I was excited. You know, it was good to get that win, first win of the night. You know, that felt good. And then for Ronaldo, you know, just the guy's been through a lot. You know, he's got a son. He's, you know, he's overcame some injuries. He, you know, obviously was a transfer from Iowa State. He's come a long ways, and just really happy for him. And so, yeah, I watched the video, and it wasn't quite as bad as I thought it. Because as soon as I got done celebrating, I walked off the stage. I was like, "Ooh, maybe I shouldn't have done that." But no, it was okay.
Nick, as you know, we're a sport that's heavy on the national championship event. The dual meets really don't count for much. Because of that, we have to manufacture some reasons to get excited. And one of those can be potential matchups like Grandview against Iowa State or Wartburg or Loras or Nebraska-Kearney or Augsburg or St. Cloud State. Why can't one of those happen? Why can't we see Grandview versus some of these programs?
I think it could. I mean, I think it's part of one of the tougher things is there's been, you know, there's a couple times, would talk to some of these other schools about trying to figure it out and make it work. Timing is hard. Yeah. And that's one of the toughest things about it is just where does it fit in your schedule? You know, you can do it early in the season, which sometimes coaches are a little leery about doing because you don't know who your best team is at that point. A lot of times, you know, and I'd say in the D2, D3 NAIA divisions, a lot of times we have guys that are eligible second semester. And so sometimes that makes it a little bit tougher. And December, you know, a lot of us are traveling. And then January is always a crazy packed month. And so it's just, I think a lot of times it's timing. Of course, a lot of times it's ego. A lot of times, you know, there's schools that maybe feel like they have more to lose in that situation, you know, which I can understand. But yeah, if it works out, if the timing works and we can make it happen, we'd love to do it. I mean, it's good for the sport. And at the end of the day, you know, whatever. I mean, it's been a positive situation for us in the past. We wrestled, obviously, back in whatever that was, 2014, 2015, we wrestled Iowa State and Drexel. that same year, we wrestled Maryville, and they ended up finishing third in D2s that year. You know, so it's fun when he can make those happen.
Kyle alluded to one of the two questions that I get. I get two questions about Grandview quite a bit. Number one, when is Grandview going to wrestle Wartburg? Number two is, does Nick Mitchell have any desire to try his hand as a Division I coach? What do you say to that?
you know, wrestling is so weird when you look at it, and you know, as far as how we hire coaches, if I was a basketball or a football coach, my phone would probably have been ringing off the hook for the last 10 years after we won, or, you know, won the title, you know, even before maybe. But you know, we've won 9 in a row, and there's not people would probably be surprised, you know, in all honesty, that I don't hear much from any other, you know, from Division I schools. And don't get me wrong. So the first part of the answer is I love Grandview. I love where I'm at. I love the fact that, again, I had a really good example with Coach Miller. He made Wartburg the place for him. And he, you know, probably had a couple opportunities to go coach at UNI. when he was at Wartburg and decided to stay. And so, again, it was a really good model for me that, hey, if you're in a great situation, I love where I live. I've got a supportive cast here of coaches and administration. Wrestling is important here. They support us. You know, you've got all these positives. What you don't have to make a move just because it's Division One. But with that said, you know, I think it's something that I don't know if it'll ever change. But think about this. I mean, when new jobs open up around the country, and you look at, you know, the scuttle of, oh, who's going to get hired or who should they bring in? It's amazing to me that wrestling fans will say, oh, we should bring, you know, a guy that maybe just graduated because he's a national champ. And we got to be one of the only sports that does that. You know, I mean, if you look at, I don't know, I was talking to Josh Roden the other day. He's the coach of Clackamas, and we were kind of laughing about it. You know, he's in a similar situation. And we said, you know, if the CEO of IBM steps down, that you hire another CEO. You don't hire a guy that's really good on computers, you know? So it's different, man. It's wrestling is unique in that way. And I don't know if that'll ever change or not, but, and for some guys, sometimes for a guy like me to say that, maybe it sounds self-serving. Maybe it sounds like it's just, I'm preaching as to why somebody like me should be a candidate for these types of jobs. But it's really not, because I love where I'm at. It's just, it's the reality of what it is. And anybody who follows wrestling can see that that's just what we are. And I don't know, maybe that stems back to, you look at a guy like Coach Gable, you know, he was the best wrestler in the United States. And all of a sudden he goes to Iowa, and all of a sudden they've got the best team for a long time. And maybe he set the tone for that. So maybe it's his fault. I don't know.
You're right though. I mean, we see far more Olympic gold medalists, multi-time national champions running elite programs than we do guys like Brian Smith. And, yep. You know, look to football. I mean, Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, you know, their pasts as athletes were nothing exceptional. And, you know, they're two legendary, iconic head coaches now. But one thing that, you know, when I think about Grandview too, and you've kind of alluded to it in this conversation as well, is continuity. You mentioned Paul Reedy and Grant Turner, and they've been bedrocks of your program. How have you been able to maintain the staff continuity the way you have? And seems like you guys work really well together.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of it is over the years, you kind of fall into your roles, you learn what everybody's strong points are, and you run with those, you know, and you let guys just be good where they're good. And so I think there's a little bit of it there with guys like Reedy. You know, it's touching base with him as often as possible, as far as just, hey, are you still happy? Is this what you want? You know, and obviously he could be a head coach at many programs if that's what he wanted to do. But I think he's similar to me. I think he's in a situation where he likes where he lives. He likes Grandview. We work really well together. And, you know, a lot of times you hear about coaches talking about delegation or letting your assistant coaches, and, you know, empowering them. And I think that's really what that is. It's empowering them doesn't really mean like giving them a list of things to do. It's just trusting that whatever they're doing is good. I don't have to look over Reedy's shoulder. I don't have to, you know, we hired Grant Henderson this year. I don't have to look over his shoulder and ask him what he's doing all the time. You know, if he's not in the office, I just assume he's doing something that's productive for the team. And usually for Grant, that means he's probably down at the wrestling room doing an individual technique. And with Reedy, I don't know what he does most of the time, but I know he's working. I know he's doing something productive. And then usually I'll get an email or something from him, and he's got a to-do list for me. So it's just trusting your guys, you know, and making sure that at the heart of it, you got people that they're there for the right reasons. They want to help guys get better, and they're not selfish. And if you ever have coaches that come in here, if that's how they are, they either change or they find their way out of here because they see that that's not what we're about.
Mike Ritchie at Southern Oregon, retired after 25 years. Did you know him, and what do you think about him?
Yeah, man, when I first started here, Southern Oregon was real tough. 2012, we beat them in the semis of the national duels, and I knew that was our toughest duel of the tournament. We knew it was going to be, and they had a really good team. 2013, we beat them in the finals of the national duels, and came down to Eric Thompson pinning their heavyweight in the very last match of the duel. That year, we only beat them by 6 points at the national tournament. And he's a legend. Anyhow, he's been around forever. And so, yeah, he's going to be missed. I mean, he's one of those guys that he's always got something funny to say in meetings, and he keeps us on our toes. So, yeah, he's been around a long time.
Dan Gable has three statues in Iowa. What's your statue going to look like, Nick?
I don't know. Probably, it'll probably be like in the locker room of the wrestling facility down here at Grandview. It'll be small.
I kind of like to tell this story about just the wrestling culture, is that your wrestling room is right by the wrestling offices, all the athletic offices, I think. And there was a time where in the old wrestling room, the action came out into the actual athletic department, and the AD saw it. And I think he was a little caught off guard by that, wasn't he?
Yeah, we've had some of that. You're right. It's now our women's wrestling room, but it's right, you know, on one side of the room, there's double doors that go out to an indoor track. And then the other double doors go right into like this office area here where my office is and the women's wrestling coach's office is. And yeah, I mean those double doors that go to the track. I remember Thompson, like blast doubling one of our heavyweights through that door. And I mean, they're steel doors, and he bent those things in half. I mean, those doors are never the same. And then these doors, I remember it was Quentin Haynes and Dallas Houchins, and they went through and I mean, they weren't just wrestling. These guys started fighting there. I just remember like Houchins laying, he was on his back on the carpet, and he's throwing punches from underneath, and Quentin Haynes is on top of him throwing punches. And I think our AD was like, what? And he's a baseball guy. And he used to give me, back then I used to wrestle with the guys a lot. I remember coming through there one time, I got split open. I was bleeding. And he's just like, what did we get going here? it probably really helped our cause to get that wrestling facility built off campus when those guys saw us coming through there bleeding and fighting every day.
Yeah. Good idea. Protect the administration from seeing all that, but it's,
exactly.
Good situation. Real quick on the women's program, how's that helped your program? How's that worked as far as a symbiotic relationship?
It's been great. Obviously, Coach Crinzy wrestled for us, so we have a really good relationship. I tell those guys a lot, you know, we want to help them in any way we can. And the other part is he was around when the program was young, and so he saw a program being built, plus I'm just here, you know, as a resource for him as far as getting things going. But they're doing a great job. I mean, they've got a good culture right now. They're building around good Iowa girls and some really talented out of state girls. So pretty excited to see what's going to happen with that program over the next few years, especially with the growth of girls wrestling in Iowa right now.
I said that was the last thing, but you triggered something else at Life University. Omi Acosta is the head wrestling coach there. He went to Grandview. Do you enjoy watching him on the sidelines as much as we do?
if it's not against us, I do. Yeah, we and we laugh. Like, we'll watch him wrestle, you know, competing against some of these other teams, and he's so high energy when things are going well. But yeah, man, he gets fired up over there. He's funny. We laugh. We have a good time. We'll be watching film sometimes, and I'll get distracted just watching Omi jumping around, acting like a goofball in the corners. But yeah, man, we're proud of him. He's obviously doing a really good job over there.
And he was like that at Grandview?
Yeah, I mean, he's an emotional guy. I would say when he was an assistant coach, he probably wasn't as high energy in the corner as he is now. But I think he feels that, you know, he feels the pressure. I mean, I've talked to him about that before, just like any coach, you know, he puts a lot of weight on it, and he feels the responsibility of putting a good product out there. He's competitive and he wants to win. And so he gets into it, man. He's really emotional on the sidelines.
Nick Mitchell, thanks for this time. Congratulations on your ninth consecutive NAIA Wrestling Championship, and look forward to seeing what you're going to do next.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys.
Wrapping up there with Nick Mitchell. When you were at the Register, you covered his early years. Did you think it was going to last this long?
Never even thought about that. Did I think their string was going to last this long?
Yeah, do you think they had the potential to be a dynasty like this?
Not right away. No, I mean, the first, I think, what was it, year two, that it was really tight, and they had some hammers that were in that lineup then. And the thing about it is they just lose, like, they lose all this firepower year after year, and they just reload, and they keep going. I mean, there was a bunch of multi-time national champs a couple, 3 years back, and obviously they're not scoring 234 and a half points and beating the opposition by 160 points every year like they did a couple, 3 years back, but they're, what they've done is, it's kind of mind-boggling, because NAIA wrestling has gotten substantially bigger and better since the beginning of this Grandview run, and for Grandview to keep raising its game year after year and keep the opposition at bay, that's been pretty incredible.
And from my recollection, I just remember hearing that Grandview was going to add, and it's kind of like, oh, that's nice. We'll see how they kind of get themselves into it. And that's kind of cool. You never expect a championship to happen anytime soon. You think it's a long play that maybe 10, 15 years down the line. And then it's now they're a powerhouse, just not out of the blue, but they win a championship. It's like, wow, this team is for real. And then it's another and another and another. Yeah. And they just kept the string going. So I appreciate what he said, though, about, and I liked your line of questioning there, that we really do focus on, hey, what are the credentials of the coach? And I think the narrative that we've had even on the last couple of shows has been some of our favorite coaches and the best coaches and the ones that are doing the right things don't really have any athletic credentials, so to say. I mean, they have some, but they're not the NCAA champion or even All-Americans in the case of Paul Reedy. But what did he say there? He's the hardest working guy he knows. And I think there's a lot to that in wrestling. I don't think that sometimes we equate coaching acumen to what their credentials were on the mat.
Yeah, well, just because you can double leg someone from halfway across the gym doesn't mean you can teach somebody to do it. And so much of the sport is getting people to believe in themselves, and not everybody's capable of communicating at a high level or organizing at a high level. And, you know, for some people, I really believe that in some cases, like the people that it comes harder for them, they have to struggle a little bit more. They have to figure out their own way a little bit more. They become better coaches than the people that are just blessed with every tool known to man.
Because, yeah, think about the process. They're sitting back and they're learning the process as you go along. They aren't in the lineup, but what are they doing? They're watching the coach. They're taking on different roles throughout the team. And so you can see why, as you mentioned, Bill Belichick, I love him as an example, is that I don't know that he really even played football. He played some other sports, and he was probably on the sideline learning and having that that mind to be able to execute on the field, because football is probably the most complicated team sport there is, and to be able to execute that, it doesn't really matter that you can split a defense and have blazing speed. It just doesn't equate.
I, for a long time, didn't give Nick Saban enough credit as a head coach, you know, what he's done at Alabama, because I sit there and I watch the recruiting rankings year after year, and it's like they're bringing in 25 4 and 5 star recruits. They're getting guys that are coming to Alabama to basically sit on the bench for 2 or 3 years. They don't think that that's what they're getting into, but that's what they're getting into in some cases. And I just felt like it was an embarrassment of riches as far as talent is concerned. And then one night I stumbled upon a Saban speech on YouTube, and I was glued to it for like, it's a 45 minute speech. I was glued to it from start to finish. I went back and watched it like 3 times, and I'm like, all right, now I get why they are as successful as they are. I mean, this guy is an incredible leader and sets a super high standard for everybody in his program and expects people to meet a certain standard. And it's no accident why Alabama's as good as they are. It's not just a matter of talent, and somebody's got to go out and procure all that talent too.
And another element too that I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do too, but I've heard that, well, they aren't that good a coach. They just got good athletes coming in, and they just recruit really well. Well, isn't that what it's all about?
Yeah.
Like, it's
part of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point of this is you get good athletes in, you have 4 to 5 years to get them to that level. And that's the whole point is you don't have much time. You have your narrow window to get them to that point. And why wouldn't you want the best recruits? You're going to say, yeah, we want to win a championship, but we're just going to maybe just recruit middle of the road guys and see if we can develop them and see what happens. It's just not the right formula.
And guess what? If you recruit high level athletes and you bring them in and you don't develop them, then you're not getting those high level athletes anymore after 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's what the formula is here. Nick has gotten some high level athletes and he's been able to develop them into really good wrestlers, championship lifestyle. This has been a fun show. It was great talking with Nick Mitchell. Again, 9 NAIA wrestling championships in a row. We'll see if they get 10. For Andy Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.